When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome. If you're looking for a story, a dose of the stranger-than-fiction side of the world we live in, then you've come to the right place. There are a lot of stories here to choose from, and today's is a new story that takes place in a world where inventions are more than just knowledge-turned-discovery. They become opportunities, and not always of the awesome kind. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web, taking on the mysterious and outrageous jobs that no one else will or can. This is one of my adventures. Today is a journey into the possibilities of man, the extraordinary capabilities that we as the human race possess, and how the power of our minds can take us in one of two directions, good or evil. Take a listen and enjoy. This is part one of this job, a genius in the game. We are at the warehouse. It's pretty early in the morning. I always check on my incoming first thing. There's a few of us up. Jagger and I are on computers. Frankie's doing an early morning workout. And Scarlett is making coffee. I like the warehouse first thing in the morning, especially on a day that's just a regular day. And this one was. The sun's coming in. It's pretty quiet. You have to enjoy those moments because, especially for us, we're on the run and gone so much that it really does feel nice to just have some of that quiet time. And I'm going through some things, waiting for that coffee. And sure enough, there are a few requests waiting for me. And today's job that I'm going to tell you about is one of those. This request is from a man who tells me that he's scared. He's scared and desperate. He says that he doesn't know me, but that he found my information among some of the emergency and SOS materials that he found in his boss's things. His boss is missing. And worse than just missing, he's been taken. And not only does this requester need help in recovering this person, someone needs to stop those that took him from using their doctor now captive in the wrong way. The requester tells me that the technology his boss, who I'll refer to as Gene Northam, Dr. Gene Northam, was working on is too far out there and complicated for the requester to explain in his plea for help. And he even adds that it could technically even be too late. It's not hard to tell that this requester is a bit overwhelmed. He's asking that we get together, that it would need to be soon. Tells me that he's currently stationed at their Maryland location, and although it would not be safe to meet on location, he could be ready in a minute's notice to leave and meet me close enough, somewhere where we could talk, wherever I would choose. And then he signs it. And for this story, I will call him Leslie Gordon. He's from the NINDS, and he notes that he's from their classified division. Well, I know what the NINDS is. I know all about them. You may not, though. NINDS refers to the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke. Basically, at the NINDS, they are working to learn and understand the brain and nervous system, and they work to seek knowledge so that they can reduce the impacts and effects that neurological disease has on our world. This group was out to help with brain issues, learn what they could do to help keep bad things from happening, things that interrupted regular function, regular thinking, and life itself. The ability to go about one's life, just as most of us do, without things preventing us from thinking clearly or from doing things without purpose and intention. But this Leslie Jordan, he is with their classified division, as I mentioned. They branch out into things that go beyond the main missions of the NINDS, but are still related. To know exactly what Mr. Jordan is a part of and what the problem is, of course, I will need to meet him. So I pick a place close enough. I ask him to meet me in College Park. It's in Maryland. It's only about 4 miles outside of Washington, D.C., and close enough to the NINDS, but also far enough away, and a great place for a small and private meeting like this. I am able to get to him the same day as I get that request. It's just another one of those quiet days, now leading into the unknown. Happens all the time. Okay, so I go, and I take Jagger with me. He helped me dig around that morning for some information, so he was already engaged. We get to College Park in the late afternoon. It's a little misty out, and we're all set to meet at the entrance of one of the few walking trails there. Sure enough, when we get to where we need to be, we see a man sitting on a bench in an open trench coat, and he immediately stands up to greet us, introducing himself as Mr. Jordan, and then tells us we can call him Leslie. He's fairly tall, sporting the classic businessman's haircut with his light brown hair. And under his coat, we can see that he's in some dark slacks, a white button-down, and a tie. Looks like an organized type of guy. Well, an organized guy that is pretty anxious at the moment. I can see he's trying to be calm, but he just can't hide anxious like this guy's got. Not all the way. I tell him that it's great to meet him. I introduce Jagger, and we all agree to take a walk. We're in a great place, and Jagger and I are pumped to find out what's going on here. Leslie starts out by letting me know that he did his research, and then he acknowledges some of my previous involvement with the NINDS. Looking through Gene's files, it was clear to Leslie that I was no stranger to the group. He continued on then to explain how he is a part of this classified division, and he knows I know about this. But I wouldn't know all that goes on in that division, and Leslie assures both me and Jagger that we have not heard about the project that he is currently on. We have the park to ourselves for the most part, but there are a few people walking our way, so we duck off down a side path and find an area with some benches, and we sit down. From that area, we can keep an eye on the place and our voices low. Once settled, Leslie gets into the unique project that he's been a part of with Gene. He explains that this was all meant to be a positive, something to help people with certain issues where relief by the other means offered to them was not successful. The topic was anxiety and depression all around the world. And Leslie says that their idea, how this group was formed originally, was in response to this problem. The drugs they give out do work for some and are managed well, but for many, they do not work. And then there's the group of people that don't really notice if the drugs are helping or not, but they continue to take them for years for no other reason other than they think that they should. Either way, their proposal to the NINDS addressed the fact that the overall issue is not getting resolved. People on Xanax their whole lives, people taken down by Prozac, those using antidepressants and anxiety drugs recreationally, thinking there's a high somewhere. Are these solutions, in all reality, doing the good it was meant to on the larger scale? They found that with use, in general, people are more mellow, almost even knocked out at times, but they're still depressed, for example. Sometimes, while using these drugs, you're advised not to drive a car or operate machinery. I mean, if these solutions that are out there are supposed to help you get through your day, how does it work if you cannot go about your day? That really got Gene going. In the end, after all their reports and presentations on the facts they found, Gene and his group were approved to work on a solution. Their solution, Leslie went on to explain, would be more proactive and drug-free. No prescriptions to fill, no drugs to take at certain times of the day, with food or without food, driving or not. Many efforts to stop mental things from happening are meant to put the fires out, interrupt how certain issues hurt people who are affected by them. For people with depression and anxiety, it's the mind at work, in whatever way it is. It is in control. And that's why people are looking for solutions, because they feel out of control. They cannot manage their feelings. They cannot stay happy, and they're nervous and anxious about everything. And I'm generalizing here because there's a lot to all of this, but you guys hopefully get the idea. I mean, this isn't a psych lecture. I'm just trying to give you the general idea of these complicated projects. Jean did not want to simply put the fires out that go on in some people's minds. He didn't want to smother any issues with fog and indifference. And just a quick note here, to be completely sensitive, I am not saying that Jean felt this was how it was for everyone. Prescriptions work fine for a lot of people out there. But his feeling and findings were that there were too many people still struggling, and there were no other good solutions out there for them. Jean wanted to address those still suffering, and he found there to be many in studies he did all around the world. All right, well, Leslie explains that what his particular group was doing, Jean's group, involved a different approach. Instead of continuing the assumption that the only way to deal with these issues would be to suppress those anxious and depressed feelings that the all-powerful brain seems to put on some, Jean wanted to redirect the magnificent energy of the brain to focus in a different way. Don't tame and quiet a mind's energy and thoughts. Use that energy for something good. It's no secret in the scientific world and beyond that the brain is capable of much more than we have come to realize as of yet. Without going into all the details, Leslie explains that Jean had perfected the ability to help balance out the levels of someone's life. You've heard of chemical imbalances, I'm sure. Well, according to Jean, the same is true for our lives. There's too much of a good thing, right? Well, the same goes when there isn't enough of something else. We are the victims of experience and circumstance, Jean would say. He believed it was our experiences that made us the way that we are, with our mind and any defects as the director. That makes a lot of sense to Jagger and I as we're sitting there listening. And we can accept the general idea of it. It's what Jean was doing about it, though, that made the biggest difference here. According to Jean, you could make sense of someone's personality, psychological health, and mental state, and even their viewpoints, and so on, by understanding their experiences, which are, in turn, levels of influence. And not just to know those experiences and things, but where it actually leaves them today. This is pretty high-level stuff, guys, so bear with me. Take a man who beats his wife. Someone like this might have very high levels of anger and very low levels of joy. Then take a very wealthy man. He might have a very high level of joy, but he could also have a high level of sadness or loneliness to go with it. See what I mean? What about fear? What about worrying? What about loneliness? If we could get an instant printout of our current state right now, we would get a report unique to each of us based on what got us here. One level for anger, one for joy, one for sadness, and so on. And as I'm sure a lot of you know, there's no real definition for a normal person. You know, what is normal? That isn't something to get into here exactly, but what Jean did was to evaluate normal with regards to what is most common with what works. What levels seem to keep people the most settled and serene in their lives? Jean took years to conduct his research and perfect his theories, as you can imagine. In the end, if someone's life was off in some way, out of balance, one level through the roof and one almost empty, he believed he could replace their off-balance energies and redirect the person in a good direction with life-lasting results. Imagine a general person that comes in for help to, say, a doctor, a psychiatrist, and let's just call them patient A. They come in for help with their anger issues that are causing them problems, all kinds of problems. They're mad at their husband or wife, their job, or it's gotten so bad, maybe they're just mad at life itself. But either way, they have this layer of anger that follows them around wherever they go. Now, people with anger issues seek help all of the time, but sometimes the doctors are limited in the help they can provide. Can pills always help this issue? Can anger management classes fix that? For some, sure. For others, they only get fuzzy-headed from the meds, and the classes might just make them more angry, and the anger stays consistent within them. Jean did not believe in taming the anger or shoving it to the side, but instead his goal was to redirect the energy being used by the angry mindset, to something else that could be more useful. Use that negative energy in a new way that could help their lives and make it a permanent part of them. Okay, well, Jagger and I were listening to Leslie tell us all of this, and it all sounds great. It's a great idea. Jagger and I know more than one person, as I'm sure you all do, where something like this would have definitely changed certain situations. I asked Leslie how on earth Jean thought of this, and Leslie said it was a story that Jean heard a long time ago from a young boy in an interview. The young boy was told that he was dying of cancer, that his body was riddled with tumors. Well, every night the boy pretended to play asteroids, and he was shooting all of his tumors. He would see them in his mind as targets, and he would eliminate them one by one. At the end of this boy's long battle with the disease, he came out clear. The doctors couldn't quite explain what happened, and the only explanation for any of it was the boy's own words and how he fought the disease every day with his mind. That's pretty incredible. I mean, could Jean prove this just by hearing a story? No, he could not. But he said it was his inspiration, that it brought forth to his mind what he felt was obvious, that the mind is more powerful than anyone could realize in general life. Only those that, you know, study and tap into the brain's energies as a focus of their career and lives have discovered more of what the brain can do. Unless you're reading it in the medical journals, you might not have all the information. Jean felt that he too might not have all the information. And why not try to use one's own body and powerful mind to help resolve a solution that is generated from within the body itself? And that was the key here, from within the body itself. No meds, no therapy sessions, none of that. Jagger and I are both impressed by the beauty of this idea. It made us both think. Sure, the idea of mind over matter, it's not new, but this approach is. You can try to show someone, take them along with you to do great things and try to show them how great the world and their lives can be. But according to Jean's theories, it's only when the experience really hits you on the inside that you can actually believe the results. That can do so much more. And that is what he was doing. So, there Jean was, approved and ready to go on this research project. It would all be done in private, of course. It's not something they wanted the media or the public to get a hold of, at least in its beginning stages, because it would only give them a chance to rip the whole idea to shreds or turn it into a negative in some way. No, this had to be rolled out in the background. They needed willing participants to go through the process and then allow for some time so that they could prove themselves back in society. It would be a quiet launch, building up to a proven and working program that could be unleashed to the world with outstanding results. This all sounds positive, and they've gone about things in a very responsible way. Jagger and I are very interested in how the doctor's actually doing all of this. But before we can get into that, Leslie still has more to explain. He says that they were in their quiet launch, and yes, things were going great. Gene and his team set up shop offshore so as to avoid any of the unwanted attention. They chose an island that was meant for this type of thing. It was out of the way. It had a full-on lab, offices, lodging, and a full staff across the board. Gene and his group were recruiting their patients, working with some of the many successful psych doctors in our world. And there were no shortage of candidates. People go around and around with their psychologists and psychiatrists year after year, getting nowhere. More drugs, more therapy sessions, and more frustrations. Again, it works for some, but there are a lot of people out there unsatisfied with their sessions, appointments, and doctor results. They are left discouraged and disheartened. Some are angry, and some have lost hope. Doctors and therapists offered up some of those patients, ones willing to try something new to help break through their biggest barriers in order to change their outlook and lives. Gene would help identify the best subjects, and they started to build a patient base. They tried to make it easy. Gene would cover any expenses for the patient for the time that they would be there, and overall, they really thought things out carefully, down to the smallest of details. And because of all of this, Leslie tells us their system ran more smoothly than even they expected. A patient only needed to be in for 3 days, well, a week total with observation, and then they could return to their lives. And now enough time was passing that Gene and his group, they were able to go start collecting post-procedure data, the outcomes and behaviors of their patients. Checking in with both patients and their psych doctors, they found things to be going very well. The procedures were working, and they have a lot of solid patients out there in the world today walking around with new and improved lives. I mean, Jagger and I are loving this guy's account of what's been going on so far. We want to know more about it, but we can see that Leslie's getting kind of anxious. He sees that we notice his discomfort, and he tells us that being in the park is starting to make him feel a little bit paranoid. And just as he's telling us this, some lady walked by with an umbrella. As she walked by, she popped her umbrella and covered her face. It wasn't even raining at that time. So now we're all getting suspicious. Leslie leans into our small circle of three and tells us in an even lower voice that Gene had been kidnapped. He'd been kidnapped for his life-changing process, and most likely not so it could go help anyone. We can pretty much be sure of that. At this very moment, Gene could be carrying out forced changes to unwilling participants. Leslie says that this involves ugly actors, ugly characters, and this could do a lot of damage. They could turn on Gene and affect him as well, turn him into something that he's not. If we can't get this handled, there's no doubt in Leslie's mind that Gene's project and its progress will be lost. But the process and procedure would still be out there, only to be used for bad things. And who could know to what extremes? Gene's discoveries were great when they were helping people, but it could become something dangerous if used in this way. Two more people walk by where we're huddled and talking. It was a little too close for comfort. Even though we're set back a bit, without saying anything, we all agree to just get up and leave. There's no need to sit there and let the paranoia get the best of any of us. On our way back, we quietly talk about the next move. I need to know more about this, like I do on any job. But I'll tell you anything.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Think threatening people that's an evil plan orchestrated and then carried out in large numbers, which it sounds like this could become, it's not a good thing. I would like to know more. I need to know more. And Jagger's not liking the sound of any of this either. We make a plan to go to the island. It's where we would have to start. I have to organize my team, but we move quickly. Jagger, Frankie, Scarlett, and I get ready to get on a plane. We will head over to the island to learn more about Gene and his facility. I need to see Gene's setup, what was taken, what Gene left behind, and what he might have known about who took him. Harley and Ryder stayed back. As you guys know, we have organizing and things that we do when we get done with a job. We do so many, and there are some good gems of knowledge from each job. You know, things we learn to do, things we might not want to do again, the theme of the job. And then after our write-ups and things, each job gets categorized and filed. Anyway, there was still some of that to do from a recent job, and so Harley and Ryder stayed back to finish it up, hold down the fort. And the rest of us, we'd have to travel pretty far for an informational dig. We weren't even positive this was going to be a job, but the only way to find out what all is going on was to get out there. Leslie flew to the island with us, and the flight took a while, and during the flight, he shared with us some more information about Gene's project. Leslie was a lot more relaxed on the plane than during our first meeting. You know, private plane, being in the air. The name for Gene's project was the Norputics Initiative. Based on his name, it was his take on a long-lasting, drug-free form of therapy. To help us even better understand what it was Gene did, Leslie shared a story about one of Gene's patients. Told us of a woman who'd been divorced for 6 years. Let's call her Deborah. After her divorce, Deborah's life spiraled downward. She was depressed. She didn't feel like working, almost lost her house that she got in the divorce, and was barely holding on to her children. Deborah had a decent job, mind you, but going in and handling the load every day seemed more and more pointless to Deborah as time went on. She started to get angry that she wasn't moving up in her company. Her son struggled in math, and that upset her. She stopped seeing any friends, really, and her only support seemed to come from her therapist, and even that relationship was on thin ice, since Deborah didn't feel like anything was changing, especially her mood or attitude. Post-divorce sucks. She was robbed of her life, and nothing was fair. That's all Deborah could think about. With divorce, you lose friends, respect, self-respect. She didn't want to see any friends. She had nothing to offer in that circle now. Could not compete. And seeing her ex every other weekend, exchanging the kids, killed her self-esteem. Everything in her world was becoming a negative. Deborah was lost between a world and life she managed and had come to know all too well, to being a stranger in her own existence. Even walking down to get her mail was difficult. And when the kids weren't there and she was alone, Deborah's nights were diminished to a bottle of wine on the nightstand, bad TV, and a box of Kleenex by her side. Talking with her doctor, Jean learned that this woman was blocked. She wallowed in and seemed to almost take comfort in her sorrows. She was seriously stuck. It was impossible for Deborah to imagine that her life could be different in a good way after her divorce, that she was still worthy and could pursue her interests. She still had them, but Deborah just refused to even look at them. She was blocked to anything she once thought she was, and anything that at one time she might have thought was enjoyable. With nowhere else to turn, and with the support of her doctor and all other arrangements made, off to the island she went. All new patients were escorted to and from the island to make sure the transition was smooth. After they left, follow-ups would also be a part of everything. The tracking of progress and changes, moods and emotions and things were crucial to the project. 6 months post-procedure, Deborah was doing great. She saw work as a positive challenge instead of a chore. She worked extra hard, talked to her boss, and did get moved up a notch at her place of employment. She started making plans on the weekends that her kids were gone and reconnected with friends. When Deborah first got to the island, she thought everyone hated her post-divorce. But that wasn't true. And after the treatment, she could finally see that. She even started taking yoga, and she liked it so much, she is now thinking of becoming an instructor. 6 months ago, she would not have done any of those things. She would have continued to be depressed. She probably would have quit her job, lost her house, possibly her children, and who knows where she'd be right now. What happened? Jean's genius, Leslie tells us. Jean gave Deborah the experience of a woman who became a success after her life after divorce. And to Deborah, that felt good. She could never have imagined feeling that way, not with her life the way it was, not with how blocked she was. At this point, I have to interrupt Leslie, because how exactly can Jean give someone an experience? Well, Leslie says it was a type of implant. And, okay, we're immediately interested in that, said that Jean was able to implant feelings and experiences from one to another. In doing this, the person receiving the treatment would suddenly be able to see, feel, and believe in things that would have seemed impossible to them before, like hope, confidence, and happiness. For Deborah, her implant gave her the experience and confidence to be independent again. Once Deborah could actually feel and experience what it would be like to be happy and confident after divorce, it woke something up in her, and she left the island feeling capable again. The process, Leslie explained, was like a way for the brain to believe, hey, we've done this before and we can do it again. Instead of a bunch of negative energy being wasted on anger and depression, that same energy could then be used on these new ideas a person would have. Think about your own experiences. You'd have no problem doing something that you knew you were good at, right? We as a people have confidence and are proud of what we know. It's the same idea here. Jean was known to say, how do you get someone to believe things differently? You give them something to believe in. Someone depressed and down? Give them a dose of satisfaction, success, and motivation. Someone afraid to try something? Anything. Let's say water skiing. Well, give them the experience of being on the water and let them feel how good it feels to keep your balance and feel free on the water. Someone feeling intimidated all the time? They feel small and it causes them to be anxious? Well, give them the experience of a true win. And this was a great plan and a type of growth therapy that was working. We, Jagger and I, are very curious how Jean actually does all of this. And Leslie assures us that we will see it all in the lab. And Leslie adds that he's convinced by what he found in Jean's lab so far that Jean was aware of a threat coming his way. Jean was smart, though. He would never leave a file, for example, in a desk drawer detailing out all these threats or his fears. No. But he might leave breadcrumbs to the details of the situation. It didn't take too long for Leslie to find Jean's SOS documentation. He knew Jean, knew more where and how to look. And that's how he found my information, something he believed Jean meant for him to find. This Jean definitely sounds like an interesting character. Leslie tells us a few more stories, and then we're finally getting to the island. We're finally getting to our destination. And it was very unique. From what we could see in the air towards the center of this small island were white buildings. They were interesting architecture, thin and curved. Very white buildings with very green around them. Looked like the bulk of the action was centered in the middle of the island. I could see some things along the waterline and beaches, but most of what was going on seemed to be in the middle. Leslie looked out his window almost in as much awe as we were. I mean, he worked there every day. He said he doesn't get to see the view from the air very often, as he never leaves. This island was not for public use. It was not on any map. It was one of many small islands out there meant for, and I don't really want to use the word secret here, but meant for things that were in the works. Things that you don't want the whole world to know about just yet. To me, yes, this could seem sneaky, but in a lot of cases, it's actually really helpful because the wrong people can get in something and ruin all that you're doing when it might have been something useful. which from what it seems, this is what happened to Dr. Gene Northam, unfortunately. Landing at the small airport on the research island where Gene's Norputics project was underway wasn't anything much different than any time you go to a place like that. Palm trees everywhere, nice breeze, just the right temperature. We were greeted by a man next to a white passenger van who loaded our luggage, and then we all piled into the van. It was spotless, had black leather seats. It was really nice. There was obviously good money behind this project, this island. There was a second man in the van, in the front, in the passenger seat. Leslie knew him. They exchanged hellos. And then we were each given a black bracelet to put on. These bracelets would provide us official legitimacy on the island, they said. They almost reminded me of a Fitbit type of thing. It had a digital component on it and a pretty thick band. We put them on, no problem, and then not much really was said during that ride to the main facility. And when we get there, there was definitely a wow factor. The buildings were made of this white stone that sparkled in the sun, and everything was clean. Not that we were expecting garbage or anything everywhere, but what I mean is that the bushes were trimmed perfectly. The grass along the white sidewalks was cut perfectly. The flowers, even the palm trees. There was not an imperfection in sight. Leslie explains that the island is the way it is because it's seen many projects come and go, and it's a place where someone can go work with no distractions. It needed to be a place of focus. And I have to say, even from the outside, this place was definitely that. After being checked in and we go through some more introductions of staff, Leslie takes us back to where the magic happens. Not knowing what to expect, we're anxious to see the setup. Where Gene worked was temporarily off limits to the general staff at the moment, and all work was on hold. People knew that Gene was gone, but very few knew that he was actually taken. For most on the island, Gene was just on a break. When we get back to his workspace, we see a room, very black, lots of subtle blue lighting. It wasn't until Leslie turned on the main lights that we could really see what was up. In the middle of the room were three stations. They almost looked like dental chairs. They faced inward, feet pointing towards each other. Those chairs were for the patients, where they would receive the treatment. Each chair was fitted with a hood for one's head. We also noticed some security bands at the hands and feet. Leslie saw us notice that part, and he assured us that those are rarely needed. Above the three chairs is a very large dome light. And then along the walls, around all of that, behind the chairs and things, is quite a bit of computer and electrical equipment. There's lights flickering, things are happening. Frankie, Scarlett, and Jagger plop down in the three chairs while Leslie and I stand next to them, and we listen intently as Leslie explains how it all worked. As a potential patient, first Gene would analyze your issues, even using a type of lie detector test to make sure the results would be as accurate as he could get them. Then, when all of this intake was done, and there was a lot of it, a report would be generated, unique to each individual. He had detailed and basic charts for each person on the computer that could be printed out. The most simple of these looked like a bar chart, and for each category, the bars would be at a level. Using his determined sense of normal, you could be very high in some areas, as well as lacking in others. Gene would compare what he found with the determinations of your current therapist or doctor, and any major discrepancies had to be resolved. He was very careful not to mess with anyone until he was sure what the actual issues were. Once Gene finalized what was needed, what the imbalances were, he would then turn to his, what he called, his bank of experiences. He spent years collecting and putting together this data and information, experiences, feelings, and emotions, things like that. Depending on what a patient needed, Gene would then put together just the right cocktail. He would dip into his bank and put together the right formula for whatever gap or gaps there were that needed to be filled. He'd fill those gaps and then get these people on their way and in a better situation. Gene had invented and perfected a process by which a computer would help tabulate a patient's levels of emotions based on experiences, which in turn helped Gene create his unique formulas and sets of experiences for each patient. Leslie pointed out the elaborate computer system that was on each of the hoods available to the patients while in their chairs. They reminded me of those hairdryer hoods they use in salons, just so you can picture it. Anyway, each hood had a compartment that held a type of antidote, only to be used if a process was underway but needed for each patient undergoing the treatment. The hoods also, each one of them had a port on them in which Gene could connect to insert the data needed. Numerous electrodes would be placed strategically on the body, and then there was one main feed that would go into the person's ear. That sort of made us squirm. Scarlett offered to be the example as Leslie set her up as Gene would have done with any patient. The earpiece would suction onto your ear after a very flexible tiny wire was fed into the ear canal. Leslie never turned anything on, and Scarlett said it just tickled a bit, but he told us the earpiece was necessary to light up the brain, basically, so that it could receive the signal and information from the data import in the hood, which was transmitted through radio waves. This was an extremely elaborate setup, and I could see how this would take many years to perfect. Leslie started out telling us all about it, you know, megahertz, oscillations, but then he sort of caught himself because we don't need to really know all of that. So instead, he just sums it up by basically telling us a lot of things were happening so that the brain would accept the information they were trying to give it. But now, what if something went wrong? Which Leslie admitted things do go wrong at times, very rarely, but it did happen. They needed to be prepared, always stocked. That's why each chair had that special compartment for the antidote. While in the chair, if anything were to go haywire, he could administer this antidote via needle, and it would interrupt and attack any of the data being imported. Looked like a fairly simple and foolproof system now, of course, but it's hard to get your head around how much research and planning and testing that had to be done to get all of this right. It's overwhelming. Leslie explains that it was a difficult process, and although it sounds very science fiction, technology like this was actually being researched decades ago around the world. In the 20s even, they were already researching brain stimulation. And I'm telling you guys this because I'm sure it sounds pretty nuts, but the brain and all the research that has been done on the brain, us trying to understand it, interact with it, has all been pretty incredible. Leslie then takes us past the chairs to another room. It has two desks, one with a lot more stuff, and that's Gene's, and the other is a bit more tidy, and that's where Leslie finds himself on some days, entering data, writing up reports, and things like that. Leslie shows us where he found the information on me and my team, and it's easy to see that that was meant to be found by someone who knows their way around Gene's clutter. Leslie called it organized clutter, clutter with a purpose. Harder for a stranger to find anything of use, but someone in the know, like Leslie, could figure it out. He stopped looking around once he found our information. Before we all start digging around for more useful information, we ask Leslie to tell us the details of the take. What actually happened? What was going on that day? What does he know about when Gene was removed from this office/lab and taken? Leslie explains it was the end of the week, and although in normal times there's a team in this lab and these offices almost round the clock, there's one night a week that people get to feel some relief, and that's Friday night. After a long week, you know, people still work on the weekends, although at a more casual pace, but Friday's an agreed-to evening for relaxation and whatever else. Leslie was with Gene that last Friday night, and they were there until about 8 o'clock, he says. The weird thing was that Gene refused to walk out with Leslie, and they always left together. He tried his best to get Gene to move on with the night off, but Gene said he had a few more things to finish, although Leslie had no idea what those things would be, because to him, things were done for the week, and they worked very closely together. Leslie felt that something was up that night, but in the moment, somehow, you know, we can tend to not question things. Looking back now, though, it was clear that Gene had something on his mind. He was acting a little bit nervous or distracted for having such an accomplished week. Gene encouraged Leslie to just go about his evening, and eventually Leslie did, but when he got in at 9 o'clock the next morning, it was obvious that something had gone wrong. Leslie found issues when he got back to the office the next day. Confused that morning and concerned, Leslie started moving things around a bit and digging through a few items when he noticed a black binder on the bookshelf. It wasn't like the other books. It had a piece of red tape on the spine. And Leslie knew that was something because Gene had a habit of marking important things in red. Anyway, written on that red tape were the words, "Saving over silence." And Leslie explains, to a stranger that might mean nothing. Save people over being quiet, maybe? But Leslie knew Gene well. Saving over silence wasn't anything. All Leslie saw was the SOS, and that prompted Leslie to look inside that binder, and after carefully reviewing the contents on one of the pages, third paragraph down, he finds my information and how to contact me. Everything Gene did was with a purpose. He left clues, and Leslie followed them. And that's as far as Leslie got. He knows Gene did not leave of his free will, and he left our contact information for him to find it. I was very impressed at how covert Gene was. And don't forget, this was a doctor deep into his research with patients and reporting and tests. Just imagine how much extra time it took for Gene to record and then conceal information in this way. I mean, someone does stuff like this when they have a reason. That said, we didn't have a lot to go on, so we all start looking around for more clues. It was almost like a scavenger hunt. One clue led to another, and then to another, and so on. But we got there. In the mess, we found more things marked in red. One of the good finds was a journal. And inside this journal, we found many ramblings, again, decoys of nothing. But then we did see a code that was repeated randomly, multiple times. I recognized the code from my work on the dark web. The numbers represented to me a file stored on the dark web. I immediately get Harley on the line as she is our best digger of information. Because we didn't bring much on this initial trip, I give her the information so that she can use our systems back at the warehouse to try to locate and open whatever this mysterious file is. And that, my friends, concludes part one of A Genius in the Game. You've heard the setup. Now listen to the rest of the story and find out what happens next.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.